On this episode of the Fail Forward podcast, Dan and I sit down with Mia and Steve, the leadership team of the Fatherly app, a tool and a resource for fathers all around the world, providing advice, communities, as well as resource groups to support fathers in being the best dads they can be. Also, this is the first episode where we are trying out a new game with our guests that helps us delve deeper into what makes them tick and the secrets they may not share every day. Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show. So welcome back to Fail Forward with Adnan and Dan. It's been a while, but we're super, super excited to get back into the flow of things. And we're starting off with Steve and Mia, who are part of the Fatherly app. Thank you for joining us, Steve and Mia. So, Steve, I've seen you've held multiple leadership roles at different companies, and that has led you to being a lead facilitator at Fatherly. And Mia, you've had extensive work in the research and educational space, and that's led you to Fatherly. So I would love to know the moment or the few key decisions or things that happened to your life that made you want to make that step towards Fatherly and the vision that it kind of pushes forth through the app and through the people it impacts.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thanks, Steve. So, there was quite a few different key decision points and moments that led to creating Fatherly. And I would say as well, it is an app and I'm the founder, but it's really been a very collaborative process from the start, where we've been talking to dads and working with dads from the beginning. And so Fatherly is an app for dads to support their parenting and well-being. And I'm a mom, I have a 13-year-old son. And what I noticed when I was going through that new parent stage is that there was a lot of support and resources for me as a mom. And obviously I went through the very long and difficult process of carrying a baby and giving birth to a baby. But, you know, me and my son's dad, we were both very involved parents. And so what I noticed, there just wasn't the same amount of support for him as a dad. And in a way, I would say he's a great dad. And I think now, as times are changing and more dads are spending more time with their kids, that dads need as much support as mums in parenting. And we know from the research that dads are really important for their children's mental health. So I did quite a lot of research interviewing young people who are at risk of mental health difficulties. And I spoke to them once a year for 5 years as part of my PhD research. And what I saw was that some of the young people that were really struggling, they often didn't have either contact with their dad, or they didn't have, there was a lot of fighting between maybe separated or divorced parents. And also maybe they just didn't feel kind of settled and secure in the relationship with their mum and dad. And it just really hit home to me that I think we all take for granted that mums are important, and we know that that's true. But I still think there's something around changing the narrative to recognise that dads are also really important to children. I met Steve in this process of creating Fatherly. And I think what me and Steve really came together around was actually there is a bit of a crisis in men's mental health. So there's the rate of suicide in men is 3 to 4 times that what it is in women. And it's just a lot harder for men to kind of open up and be vulnerable. So Steve and I kind of united around supporting dads, but also supporting men more generally to be kind of open when they need to be open about their feelings. And I think for me, that's sort of what excites me around this podcast that you guys are doing around failure, because it's being honest and open about failure and learning from it. And a lot of mental health, being able to say when your mental health is struggling or when you're having a tough time, or when something in your life doesn't work out how you wanted, whether it's a marriage or a job or a company or whatever it is, being able to be open and get support when we fail is, I think, is really important for mental health. So, yeah, so just to say, I think what you're doing is great around talking about failure. And I think it ties in with what we're trying to do in Fatherly, which is to create safe spaces and just a relaxed environment just to, for people to show up and be honest about how they feel and what's going on for them and what they need. Sorry, no, that was a bit of a long answer, but a lot has gone into it. So that's why it's hard to not sum it up in a few words.
No, I love that, Mia. And I think you articulated well kind of the need in the market and the need in people to the solution you're providing. So thank you. How about you, Steve?
I'm a dad, father of three sons. They're grown men now, so they're 24, 26, and 28 this year. So I guess at some point I'll be a grandfather. I don't feel like it, I've been involved in community work my whole life. So since my teens. In the church, it was the beginning of that, and then after I left the church, which was quite traumatic as an event itself, went through a divorce. I've been divorced for about 12 years. Continued a lot of the work around working with communities and individuals. At the same time, I've climbed the corporate ladder and attained some sort of senior positions, and that led me into coaching and different methodologies of coaching and really interacting with people and groups, couples, and but a lot of men's work in all of that. And then, as Mia said, I met her last year as she was going through the founding of Fatherly, and we hit it off. It's a really great relationship that we've got, working relationship around our common interests and desires to see men grow. I started in lockdown 2020. I also started a men's work, which went on to become the Men's Circle and spun off to that as well. So there's we a group of us handed that to a guy called Pasco, who's very successfully grown that and turned that into something pretty good. So I think, yeah, that for me, working with Mia is just phenomenal, because she's so experienced in this area, and I'm experienced in my side of things, and we just, yeah, we as she said, I like that we came together around this need that men have for being honest, being vulnerable. We talk quite a lot about that. What is vulnerability? How does that work? What is it that men need, and really creating these safe spaces and talking about how we take a lot of what we've experienced in the past and offer it to men and dads particularly in a way that is useful to them. So yeah,
Steve, I love that. You mentioned something about the men's circle. Was that sort of like a support system for men or friends of yours?
Any men really. And again, Mia and I have we've been playing around with different aspects of that. We've been piloting different circles here. So taking that same concept, and again from a lot of what our joint experiences are in creating things that are online, or looking to build things that are in person where men can come together, dads can talk about what's going on for them. And we've been talking actually about the coaching circles as well, which maybe Mia can talk a little bit more about as well.
Yeah, that sounds so important. I want to jump in as well, because I've just enjoyed listening to you both talk about this so much. I could feel the passion coming out of both of you. And it was, for me, I see that sense of community and vulnerability straight away, just being part of this app process. Like you said, it's for dads by dads. And I feel like I've kind of shaped my life around being a dad now, where at first I feared the responsibility, and it come up to a bit of a shock when I had, my boys from 8 years ago, I think it was, in the corporate world, all of a sudden I had kids, and it was like, wow, my whole life's been shaken, a little bit. but to be part of this community that you've created now, I mean, Steve, straight away I can see your community presence and having built these circles, and the kind of words, you know, you're using in the app. And we had this WhatsApp chat. I was absolutely blown away by it. And it gives me goosebumps now thinking about it, that there was just so many people there, you know, to be able to rely on and to help one another. But the fact that they were so open and vulnerable, people were prepared to just share their, you know, story and, you know, what was going on. And you could see the power in this app that it's going to be able to help so many people. So I'd like to know personally a bit more about that kind of vulnerability side, you know, from dads, and how you are trying to drive that through a bit more. I think that's so important.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I can say, I mean, vulnerability is such a big conversation, isn't it? I think my first engagement into some of the literature and research around vulnerability came from Brené Brown. And again, that's why I really like working with Mia, because, you know, she's a doctor. So, you know, she really is a researcher. I feel like in some ways I'm experienced and I've got some good training, but it's nice to bounce off each other. And Brené Brown did a really good job of talking about what vulnerability is. And I think it's very misunderstood, you know, vulnerability, because, you know, technically, you know, if you're vulnerable, I think that the definition is you're emotionally, physically, financially, or psychologically vulnerable, which kind of is you're in a weak position, right? And so why would you choose to make yourself vulnerable to anyone? But there's this facet to vulnerability which is built around trust and opening yourself up,
a
deeper dynamic with somebody. And then that comes with a whole bunch of stuff around authenticity and really being authentic, and then that brings acceptance. You know, this is really where I am right now in this moment, and if I can open myself up to meet people in that place, then I can be met. And if I've met myself in that place of vulnerability, then I'm really making a choice and I'm choosing to share that with somebody. And then that brings a really different dynamic into the relationships. And then as a father, then I'm modeling that, you know, for my children, and my partner, in whatever way that shows up. And so there's more we can say about that. You know, the modeling, maybe Mia can talk a little bit about that, and also some of my experiences that I've seen personally and with other men around being vulnerable, especially with women. But yeah, maybe Mia can jump in on that as well.
Yeah, I guess I could just add to say a couple of, you know, the types of different types of vulnerability. Like, I wasn't expecting the range of things that we see from dads and that dads are going through, you know. So, you know, we have some dads that are going through a really difficult divorce. You know, we have some dads where, you know, they've actually had a really difficult relationship with their ex-partner. We've had dads where actually they've experienced postnatal depression. So that's where, you know, obviously we all know about postnatal depression in mums, but actually sometimes dads can have real problems bonding with their baby and with feeling happy at a time where we all associate like having a baby as sort of one of the most wonderful times in someone's life. So then if somebody is feeling down and they're feeling like struggling with adjusting to being a dad and to the changes it makes on the relationship and on the finances and on time and being able to go out with your friends, you know, it's one of these things where there was a bit of a taboo about it. And I think that taboo is changing. And I think dads are more being able to come forward and speak about when they are struggling, but it's still hard. It's still not normal. It's still not the norm. You know, I've spoken to so many dads where they will use Mumsnet, but as a reader, they'll read a post, but they don't feel like that's a space for them where they can post or say what's going on for them. Whereas I think mums are a little bit more kind of able to sort of just share what's going on and have a sort of big public discussion. I think some dads are actually a lot more private and have to have a number of things in place to feel comfortable to share their feelings and to share what's going on for them. But what's been really nice as well, I think on the WhatsApp group that we had, so we had about 60 to 70 dads on the WhatsApp group that Dan was a part of. And then now we've got about over 500 dads on the app, on the Fatherly app. But what's really nice is that often dads help each other. So some person will ask a question and talk about a difficult situation that they're in, and another dad will offer some support and advice. And I think that's a really like wonderful feature of dads as well, is that, like you were saying, Dan, like a lot of dads do want to help each other, and especially if they've gone through maybe a difficult divorce or a difficult period with their child and then come out the other side, or even small things like they learn, you know, a really good quick way to teach your kid to ride a bike or something, and then it's a nice thing to be able to share with other dads. It doesn't, you know, sometimes for some people, parenting, especially if they move to a different community, can be a lonely experience. And I guess that's mums and dads. But what we hope to change is to kind of reduce that feeling of loneliness that some people do experience, because, you know, actually there's lots of other people that are also parenting and also have questions and also, you know, worried about the future for their children and all these things. So, there's, you know, there's a lot to come together around, which is great in a way.
It can be as simple, I think, for just people to listen, just to have someone there to listen to. You just want to be able to vent what's going on. Like you said, if you're going through a difficult divorce, and I found this through this selfish act of starting a run club in the community. Something I always wanted to do, but I moved out the way in the desert in Dubai, didn't know anyone. I enjoy running, so I just posted on a Facebook group, does anyone want to, you know, come and join me for a run and we'll start a club? And people started joining, and I thought, wow, this is great, you know, I've got a run club. But then each week I stayed consistent, more people showed up, and people weren't runners, they just wanted to feel that kind of sense of community, and they were lonely and they just come out of lockdown, this was a year and a half ago, and people started opening up, you know, their stories. And there's this one dad I met who was opening up about a really challenging time in his life at that particular time, going through a really difficult divorce. And often we would just find ourselves after the run sitting down on a park bench, and I was just listening to him, and he was just talking me through everything that was going on, and that was his way of just letting things go and just having someone, you know, there to sound off of. And I didn't feel like I was able to give any advice, but it was just being there to listen, and I think that helped. I think there's definitely a space in that group for just people to be there to just listen and, you know, and hear people out. But the depth you've got now is that you have got the advice. And like you said, Steve, with the coaching that could come with it and the right places to, you know, to go for advice, it's such an important tool, I think, and thing you're doing as well.
So I had a small story that leads into a question. There have been times where I have not recognized mental health challenges that I was facing until I actually had someone to talk to about and help me realize, essentially become vulnerable to myself. And then there are other times where I needed to first accept things about myself before I could share it with others. So my question is, like, what is that relationship that you've seen between vulnerability to self versus vulnerability to others? What comes first? Are they related? Like, how does that process work?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, again, you know, maybe Mia can give, you know, more of a detailed answer in some places, and I'll give it an answer in other places. So I think just to pick up on something that Mia was talking about the way that men access their vulnerability as opposed to women, men often don't have the emotional literacy to articulate their feelings. And that's what we find, you know, when girls are small, they talk a lot more than boys, and they get access to their feelings, and again, Mia can just correct the science on this, but that's what we've seen, right? And so, you know, if you ask a boy, well, how are you doing? Fine, good, bad, maybe angry, maybe sad, and that's about it, right? You know, whereas you could there's so much more richness to that. You know, I'm feeling disgruntled, or I'm irritated. You know, maybe I'm not angry, but I'm before angry, or I'm livid. I'm absolutely furious. You know, yeah, there's a whole lot more language that we can put to that. And when men don't have the literacy to access how they're feeling, that's already the first gap. And so then they get involved in, to Dan's point, you know, a run club or a circle. And I think, yes, while we've got the coaching, Dan, the listening part is so much more important. You know, what we facilitate around the community is just being heard. And so then, Adnan, to come to your point, is just having that safe space to come into contact with how I'm feeling and see that reflected with a good facilitator, oftentimes, to draw that out of the group. You start to get access to a different range of words and emotions and feelings. And as you said, Adnan, I didn't realize that I was feeling, you know, angry, depressed, or sad, or insecure, or vulnerable. I didn't realize that I was frightened. I'm terrified of losing my son or my daughter, or you know, of being attacked. And then it gets into much deeper conversations. And then there's this thing about just being witnessed in a group. And again, what we're seeing is people are just so willing to share, as Mia was saying. It's almost so shocking. You know, you have men coming in, here's a dad sharing his deepest vulnerabilities quite openly with complete strangers, it's really powerful. And I think, hopefully that answers a bit of your question. Mia, maybe you can jump in on that as well.
Yeah, I can add my two cents. I think I agree with everything Steve said, and I think often we don't know kind of how we feel, like some of the complex ways of feeling, we don't always know until it sort of becomes external to us. So we can see it in other people, or, you know, something like journaling, or like you said, like talking something through with someone else and being heard. Sometimes this enables us to see something about ourselves that we couldn't before. And, you know, we all know what it's like to be angry. But like Steve said, sort of getting underneath those feelings, and often like fear or, you know, or regret or grief is underneath anger. And if we can kind of calm down from the anger and get to what's underneath the anger, it's really powerful. And I think societally, you know, we feel like society doesn't always support men to say, sort of openly discuss, oh, I'm feeling grief at the moment, or I'm actually really scared for the future of my family at the moment. And because it's sort of seen as like less manly to be scared or to be grieving. But, you know, and that obviously happens for some women as well. Women sometimes find it hard to talk about these feelings, or even feelings like jealousy. They're really taboo. But they come up, you know, and if they get really toxic once they get sort of pushed down and pretended that they're not there, you know. So it's, whereas if anyone can say, oh, I'm feeling scared, and we can then sort of be there for each other. And with life being so busy and so fast paced, I think sometimes there's not always that time for families, and depends on like the family culture as well, but to sort of really be present to each other around how you're feeling. And if you are feeling scared about something, or if you are grieving the loss of something, you know, being there for each other. And I think, you know, and it's, we're still not there, but we're, you know, as a society, we're moving to that place where we can support each other with those really difficult feelings. And then, you know, and then the sort of the whole situation with people, you know, kind of losing it because they're so angry, right? And they're so angry because of all these other things are going on, so they're not going to get amped up to that phase of rage if there's support for them around these other feelings. So yeah, I think, you know, and it's everyone's different. Obviously, some people are very emotionally intelligent or have families that are very emotionally supportive. But it's, I think it's something that's changing and kind of getting better all the time. Because me and Steve sometimes joke about how sometimes, you know, people say, oh, why don't you just be vulnerable? Just say what's going on. And then when actually someone says what's going on, they're like, whoa, I didn't actually mean that. That's really heavy. Like, right?
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, but I was just, you told me to be vulnerable and that's how I feel. And they're like, oh, that's way.
Didn't see that kind of worms.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I didn't expect that vulnerable.
Keep that under wraps. Yeah. So, but on the other hand, you know, if we can kind of find the right spaces, you know, again, like if a family doesn't want to hear, or, you know, a partner, a spouse doesn't want to hear, that's okay. Like, we don't all have to be each other's therapists, but then we do need spaces where we then can either therapy, coach, a group, an app, where we can let, you know, say what's going on when we really need to.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's something really big in this also around self-regulation and co-regulation. And a lot of what, you know, what we're seeing, not just in the groups, but also on the app, you know, as people are interacting and engaging, you start to see the guidance around self-regulation. And, you know, people will be challenged if somebody's sharing something and they're a bit shouty or a bit bitey or a bit prickly. And then there's a gentle response, or some people are coming in, and that'll grow as the community, even in the app, grows. And you have consistent voices that are self-regulated, then it allows other people to see and see that modeling of, oh, well, this is what it's like to regulate my emotions and be able to express myself in a way that's safe and in a safe place. And then we, you know, we're pack animals, so we need co-regulation. It's really, I think, when we're sort of traumatized, and trauma is a big overused word these days, but there's a lot of trauma out there. It's very difficult, or almost impossible. Some people would say it's impossible to self-regulate in that state. You need to co-regulate. You need to be around other people, adults, or people that are regulated, so you can, your nervous system can start to regulate around something that feels safe. So I think that's a big part of this. And again, groups and an app like this, where you can just start to share and start to see some examples. I'm not alone. Other people are going through this, and there's another dad who doesn't have access to his or her, you know, his children, or, you know, something else is going on there, then you can start to see a way through it and see some hope, and I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mia, I remember you were initially talking about how what we were doing in certain ways is similar to what you're doing, and I was thinking about, like, why do we need an app? Why can't people talk about this? But you realize that in most social situations that don't, let's say, have a set structure, rules, and norms, you're probably only expected to go up to a vulnerability level, let's say, of 6. So what I'm seeing here that you've created, and that we do our best as well to create, is to create a space that has a set of rules and norms that essentially puts attendees, guests, into a mind space that they feel ready to share, like, this level of information that fits with this space constraints and requirements. And I think that's incredible. But it's quite an interesting thing to look at human psychology and say, hey, we actually share different parts of our mind based on the unsaid rules and norms of a specific space that we're in.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say we're not a 10, you know. So we tell people, if you're really, really struggling, say you have a mental health issue, then to go to, you know, to the Samaritans, or to a therapist, or to calm. We have this campaign against living miserably helpline in the UK as well. And, you know, all those helplines are within the app. And, you know, we say we're not a mental health service. We are simply an app for dads, but we're trying to help dads' well-being. And I think it's really hard to do that without creating space for people to be vulnerable and to be truthful about what's kind of going on for them. And that's, you know, that's what we want to create. And yeah, it's a really interesting one, isn't it? Around, like, you know, if in society, you know, everything went up to an 8, would it be chaos? Because everyone would be crying and talking about their grief and their divorce all the time, you know, when you just want to. And you're right that there does need to be some kind of norms and some places where, you know, there's a degree of more decorum. But having said that, I think in the workplace, when, again, you know, when organizations don't look after the well-being of their employees, and an employee is suffering and the organization doesn't do anything, they often lose that employee, whether it's to lots of sick days or whether it's for them, you know, leaving the job. So even for employers and places where you kind of might imagine, okay, well, at work, I need to put my game face on, I need to be professional, and I need to, you know, do work as hard as I can. We know that there's still space needed for vulnerability as well, because especially in these big transitions, like, you know, if you become a dad to the second child or the third child, you know, there's some dads on our app where they have 10 children, you know, and to say that that won't have some kind of impact on their working life is unrealistic. And we know from the research that in the UK, I think America as well, more dads are spending a lot more time at home since the pandemic. So they're more wanting to work at home. And then obviously, yeah, from being at home, it's easier to then sort of take your son to football afterwards than if you have to, you know, commute back from the office. And it can be a lot easier. Obviously, it can be difficult as well with boundaries and stuff, but it can be easier to being more involved in family life than, you know, say the old pre-pandemic model of being in the office, you know, Monday to Friday. So a lot's changing, and I think there's a lot of scope for workplaces to become even more dad friendly, as well as sort of vulnerability friendly.
And even outside the workplace, I like to your point, Mia, and actually what you said, Adnan, before as well about the app and taking these conversations outside of the app as well. So almost like this offline space where dads can come together. And I was just visualizing this like retreat for like fatherly dads that sitting around a campfire in the wilderness somewhere, you know, just talking and just opening up and chatting and having a laugh. And, you know, as the fire's sizzling out, everyone's just getting deeper and deeper. And that's the power of these communities, where everyone comes together, they meet, they talk, and then you just take it offline, find a safe space, and then just let everyone, you know, be. And that I don't know if you've got that in your kind of roadmap of, you know, things to do, but that would be an amazing thing to be part of if that was, you know, something for the future, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? Like you said, connection and just being able to, yeah, those face to face.
I would say it's definitely in the roadmap. in some form, yeah
definitely, and definitely maybe there's ways we can collaborate on that in the future, because I think, and also as well as dads being out by the fireside, you know, dads and kids being out in nature is really great. You know, there's so many free activities, it's so good for, you know, the body, the nervous system. Just being out, running around in the woods, building a den. You know, there's a lot to learn, and obviously, it's really nice to come home to back to civilization as well. But there's, you know, there's a lot for kids to learn, and there's a lot of opportunities for dads and parents to bond more closely with their children. I think with these kind of outdoor activities, camping trips, all these things, you know, they're the stuff that, you know, often when you're an adult, you remember when about your childhood as well. And that's,
yeah, some of those big memories. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're so, so formative as well as good for bonding.
So important. I'm going to fire a question over to Adnan now as well. Do you think, you know, with your dad, that if, did he ever have any types of, you know, this kind of, you know, men's circle or groups? Did you ever know of him growing up, you know, talking in a vulnerable way? Or I'm just interested to know a bit more about your thoughts on visiting the app and then your relationship with your dad in that sense as well.
Yeah. So with my dad, I don't think there was much, if any, resource to be vulnerable and share this. In many ways, I see myself as being that resource. You know, whether I am in a position to really want to listen or whether I'm not, even at certain times. Steve and me, a little bit of history. I was out of, you know, Dubai, where my parents lived, for about 9 years. So actually coming back after 9 years and being closer to my parents, I think my dad almost felt, maybe was, didn't have someone to talk to about a lot of his concerns, fears, things that excited him. And I felt like that was also a part of my responsibility being here, is being that person that listens. But to like build on what Dan said, like, I think the one thing that, at least within the relationship with me and my dad, I would hope and I yearn for, you know, a son and father relationship where the father is much more focused on listening and just sharing that, hey, he feels the same way I do, instead of providing solutions. And I'm not saying that that's just the case that, you know, my parents are, but I think in general across parents in the Indian culture, generally, but I think we often as men try to find a solution to a problem instead of first just listening and letting the problem ferment to allow that person to actually come to the solution themselves.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's a real gift to your children of the future that you're already thinking about, you know, your relationship with your dad and kind of what kind of parent what the experience you had and what kind of experience you want to create for your future children. And that's, I think, a conversation that we want to sort of support more, people reflecting on their own experience of being parented. And sometimes children can be parentified, which is where the parent sort of forces them to provide emotional support for themselves, because they don't have kind of enough support around themselves as an adult. And, you know, and that does, you know, a little bit of that is okay, but a lot is not so good for a child, because a child does need that space to feel like, oh, I can be a child, and at the end of the day, like, I'm not the responsible adult, my parent is the responsible adult, and I can have this period of childhood to be free and to be a child. And, you know, I guess we can all think of people who've kind of had to grow up quickly because of, you know, maybe being parentified a little bit as a child and not necessarily, and having to look after their parent quite a lot. And obviously it varies cross-culturally, and there's different expectations across cultures about how much, you know, children should do for their parents, and how much emotional support that they should give. But yeah, so one of the things actually this last couple of days been coming up on the app as well is about kind of the inner child. And, you know, so one kind of model to think around sort of being healthy is to have a good relationship with our inner child. And that's to sort of allow ourselves to kind of do those fun things that we love, and also like support ourselves internally if we are feeling unsafe or uncomfortable. You know, not putting ourselves in those situations or having that awareness. And, you know, and so some people would say that actually looking after our own inner child sets us up well to then look after a child, because then we can empathize and think about the sorts of things that kind of a child might need to feel safe and to feel like to just have fun and do all the sort of silly things that kids love to do. So it's, I think it's really exciting that there's lots of these kind of conversations that are kind of kicking off, and it's really nice that, you know, it's really nice to have the opportunity, I think, to think about your experience of being parented in order to be a parent, because it is, you know, compared to like a job where, you know, we get so much training for beyond our own experience, we don't really get that much training to be a parent. And it's pretty much a 24/7 responsibility for at least, you know, 20 years and pretty much like the rest of a child's life. So, yeah, and yet there's a lot of like really interesting questions around being a parent that relates to our own psychology and also kind of who we want to be in the world and what kind of parent we want to be for our child as well, what kind of experience we want to give them. So there's a lot to work through, I think. And, you know, I have a 13-year-old and I feel like I'm still mulling on a lot of things. you know, obviously when you're a new parent, you have a ton of like practical things to also learn. And then as it goes on, you know, now, you know, for teenagers, there's all these sort of complex questions now around like kind of the future of technology and, you know, harmful content on the internet and, you know, and I don't know, kind of the rise of machines and there's all these kind of interesting there's all these interesting sort of existential questions as well that somehow seem relevant to being a parent, given that most teenagers now spend the majority of their time online. They're digital natives and we weren't when we, I don't know, Adnan, I think maybe you're a bit younger than me, but most of us, we kind of grew up, you know, we grew up in a world where we weren't online all the time. In our childhood, we were outside playing or maybe watching TV or doing activities. And then now these generations, they're kind of growing up where they're using computers often in a good way to like ask questions and problem solve all the time. But still, they kind of have a different experience than we had.
Well, 100%, yeah. And I think there's one specific point that I think about a lot. As someone, yeah, around my age or maybe even younger, when someone who doesn't use their smartphone for 4 to 5 hours a day and isn't on social media, the first thing they do when they wake up is, all right, they're thinking about their plan for the day, their morning ritual, things to help them prepare for the day. Whereas with someone who checks social media first thing in the morning, they are thinking about everyone else. And then they're kind of basing who they are, what they're going to do for the day based on what everyone else has done. It's almost very subconscious. And I see that in myself at times when the first thing I'll open is Instagram on a given morning. And that warps really your psychology if you do it long enough and consistently enough, that you're less focused on yourself, but you're more focused on yourself in comparison to the world.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
That's a whole podcast. Oh, yeah, I was going to just make a couple of points on that and maybe weave two things together. One, just around the being in touch with yourself thing, you know, and that self-awareness is a huge part of this conversation. And certainly something we teach, I do teach breath work and meditation. So at certain points, we weave that in and mindfulness. So there's a whole bunch there. But I think something else that just came out of the little conversation before was around having fun. And it's so easy, I think, as dads and as men, you know, to it's so serious, you know, this business is so serious. And I often will say in the circles, you know, we'll open the circle generally in the same kind of way, a bit of a check-in, and then, you know, you score out of 10 and you get a sense of who's present right then and how everyone's feeling. And then we'll maybe do a bit of meditation and then it'll all get very serious. You know, people will be really inner focused. And then I'll often say, you know, guys, it's okay to smile. And it's really always the same process. And then people are like, oh yeah, that's a good point. Like I can have fun here. And it's just, I think fun and play is such a under-recognized thing, you know, that we need in society. I think I'll leave that there, but it's super important.
No, I hear you. I really do. Stephen, Mia, I don't know if this is necessarily the end, but I want to play a short game. And this is something we're starting on the pod as well. there's a really good, cool card game called The Meaning of Life. It's by the School of Life, which is a company that focuses on like life fields, tools, books, and resources. So not incredibly far from a lot of the stuff we're doing. This is a game to get to know people. And every card has a question. And we can all play it and answer it. I'm thinking we do one for Steve, one for me, and then Dan, you and I can answer one as well. How's that sound?
Scary. Let's do it.
All right. That's what I like to hear. For everyone listening, I'm holding up a pack of cards, and I'm going to stop when Steve says stop.
Stop.
All right. Ooh, this... Steve, you are totally allowed to pass if you want, because I have never seen a card this...
I think you can always use metaphors, Steve, just as a hint. You can use some metaphors. You don't have to be too literal.
Yeah. I'm so glad Steve went first.
I don't have to be too direct.
In what ways are your sexual tastes unusual? You can totally pass. I'll allow it.
No, I don't want to pass. I think me and I will joke about this. In every way.
To be fair, you could leave it at that, yeah.
I grew up...
So this is the exact moment where Steve's audio cut out due to some connection issues. We lost him for a couple of minutes, but we moved on to Mia's question. Steve came back a few minutes later and answered his juicy response to the question we brought up.
Oh, no.
And it was going to be the best answer ever.
Oh, yeah. This is like, right, stay tuned for next week because we're going to hear Steve's answer.
I'm going to do a whole episode on that one, I think, just that question.
Talk about a cliffhanger.
I have a feeling my card is going to be relatively PG relative to Steve's card.
Mia, while we're at it, you want to do your question and then Steve can jump on?
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Whenever you're ready, just say stop.
Stop.
All right. I haven't seen it.
Ooh. Wow.
Is this not perfect?
I think this question is probably one of the biggest regrets that I think most people have.
In life, you mean?
In life.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most powerful questions, I think, that most people probably don't ever ask.
For people listening to it, the question is, what do you really want to tell your mother and your father?
Yeah, so I think with telling my mother, I think it's definitely to say that I love her and I'm so appreciative for all that she's done for me. And I probably find it hard to show it in a way. I don't know why. I don't know what went wrong. I definitely do find it hard. And when I became a mother, actually, that's when I also really realized how profoundly, like, what my mum had been through for me, you know, with childbirth and with those kind of early months where you don't get to sleep. Yeah, and I think with my dad, I was really lucky to have a great dad. So he sort of knows that he's inspired me a lot around fatherly, because I know some of the things that I've done in my life, like completing my PhD or just things that I'm proud of, I know I probably wouldn't have done if I didn't sort of have him as a role model. I think that's not to say I would have been a bum if I without my dad, but I just think he's definitely had a really, I can feel that he's had a positive effect on me, and so he's definitely inspired me around fatherly, but he does know that, so I think what I would say to him is actually just to relax. My dad worries a lot. He's a very intelligent and but kind of worries a lot, and I think especially as he gets older, I see my parents worry a bit more. It's probably also just to do with aging. But if there was a way that I could make him, both my parents, relax a little bit more, I think it would be very good for them. And I probably need the same advice. Like, we probably all you know, we've all kind of stressed so much during the pandemic. Maybe we all just need to chill out and have fun more, don't we?
Don't think you're getting away with that question, Steve. So yeah, carry on where you left off.
Yeah,
keep it PG, Steve.
Yeah, it's ironic that. So what I was saying there is, everything is unusual about my taste, and I think it's because I grew up in a traditional Christian household. Without giving too much detail, you know, it was very traditional, and then I was in a very traditional marriage. So coming out of that, I've really had the opportunity to just explore and express myself. And it's something huge. It's nice almost that I got that question, because it's something huge that men go through and their dads go through. It's a huge part of relationship, and it's one of the most under discussed in some ways, and yet one of the most pressing. And then it's the most discussed thing, because it's a piece of shadow. It comes out sideways. So we're discussing it, but in inappropriate ways, and it's leading to inappropriate behavior. So I think it's an area that I'm passionate about, and I think is super, super important for men and dads to be able to talk about. I guess I'll leave it there.
I think you really need a whole podcast for this topic, actually, just for this question, Steve.
Do you know what, Adnan? I think rather than open up any more questions, because I'm scared to know what comes out, I think let us both answer these as well. And I think for me, Steve, I can relate. My mum and dad, Christian family, very kind of religious upbringing from my part. You know, raised going to church, youth groups they started. I was part of big youth communities in and around London, something that was called Soul Survivor. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
So grew up around Soul Survivor. My dad did missionaries all around the world, delivering Bibles to China. And so I was kind of brought up around this quite heavily, you know, Christian, traditional family, you know, way of life. And I think, openly, sex wasn't discussed when I was a kid, and when it was on TV, it was almost just like, you know, quickly turn it off, you know. And I think I've experienced that, I think, the older I've gotten. So yeah, I think that's the answer I would say to that question. As you sort of popped off there, Stephen, Adnan asked the question about what would you say to your mother and father. I think it's personally one of the biggest regrets of people, you know, towards the end of their life, if they've lost their mothers and their fathers, it's the one question they wish they would have asked, you know, something they wish they would have asked them. So I think it's a great opportunity for me to kind of express what I would probably say as well. And I think for both my mum and dad, they've been through a really hard time the last 5 years, a really, really hard time. And I think that's influenced my direction in life, you know, moving out to Dubai, trying to better myself, but also be able to help, you know, my mum and dad individually from afar as well. But two of the kindest, you know, nicest people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. I'm lucky to get, you know, the best of both of them as well. But to my mum, I would say just keep believing and just never, ever stop believing in yourself, because I think she's approaching 60 soon. And from what I can see in her now, her life's just getting started. You know, she raised four boys. She's dedicated her whole life to just bringing us up and, you know, around the family. Great, great, you know, family upbringing. But I think, she is just getting started in, you know, what she's done in her life. And she'll know everything, you know, I mean about that. And for my dad, I'd probably say never, ever, ever give up. You know, in the words of Winston Churchill, he's going through a battle himself at the moment. But I believe that he's going to come through it. And his life's just getting started as well. You know, the person he once was, he went through the police, lots of difficulties, challenges that he's faced, but, you know, I believe in him too. And I think just getting started as well. So that's what I'd say to both of them.
Nice.
And now your turn.
So similarly to both Dan and Steve, I definitely grew up in a household that at least had a significant amount of religious conviction to it. And I grew up Muslim. So again, sex wasn't heavily discussed. We kind of just stayed quiet whenever there was a sex scene in a movie, or I walked out of the room, or my parents, you know, fast-forwarded that portion of the show. So I think diverging off of that kind of religious world that I was initially a part of, initially it came to a point that I took it to the almost other extreme, where I'd like joke in a childish way about topics around sex. But I think there was a moment when I actually got into, you know, long-term and serious relationships with women that I realized that, kind of Steve, like you put it, is communicating your specific tastes and desires in the moment allows for a better relationship. So while like I have my share of, you know, unique tastes, it took time for me to learn to communicate what I like and to a certain extent why I like it, that helped grow those relationships and allow both partners to express those desires, you know, in any scenario of the relationship they wanted. So very similar. When it comes to the things I'd want to tell my mother and father, I would want to tell my father that I'm appreciative of his willingness to trust my judgment. Initially, as I was growing and, you know, taking my first forays into the education and working world, my dad has a tendency to guide me that sometimes encroaches on like imposing his perspective on what I should do. And that had been incredibly helpful in many ways. But as I've grown and I've kind of taken unconventional paths in what I want to do with my life, he has been, surprisingly isn't the right word, like it's been a refresher to see that he is always incredibly supportive of anything I do, whether it results in mistakes, failures, and learnings along the way. And I truly am appreciative of that, because my father's, I wouldn't say approval, but support matters a lot to me, to my mindset. And having that is godsend, pun intended. And for my mom, I would want her to continue and even like reinforce her focusing on herself. She already does that, but the times that I see her question herself or doubt herself or get anxious is when she sometimes focuses her energy too much on others. And mind you, that's a quality I do love about her, but I see times where it erodes her own sense of self-confidence. So that's what I would want to tell my mom. Focus on herself whenever possible.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's kind of the same actually, but you've said it really well. Yeah. Wow, that got deep towards the end, isn't it? That good old card game for a bit of fun.
Quite magical. I sort of see you as a bit of a kind of mystic now, Adnan. The way that like the cards were like a perfect, the card for me was really relevant to fatherly, right? And uh-huh. Then the cards, I know the card for Steve also like really reflects Steve's identity as well. So quite a sort of magical card drawing process.
Yeah,
you both bought the card you wanted or you hoped for, so
you picked them. Yeah, exactly.
The cards.
Yeah, the mystic.
Trust the
Great.
So a game of Mystic Adnan next time. Yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Dan, do you have any final questions, thoughts, or closeout comments?
I just want to say I really enjoyed the conversation, and I think the fact that we got to the end of this conversation the way we have, I felt like, you know, we've all had an opportunity to just be able to open up. It has been a vulnerable conversation. I feel refreshed personally, just being able to, you know, say something to my mum and dad, even though they're not listening, but I'd hope they one day, you know, they can listen back to this and, you know, hear you both and, you know, hear what you said, Adnan. And yeah, I think this conversation is going to be one I'm going to remember. You know, for lots of different reasons. Just want to, first of all, thank you both for giving up your Easter Sunday, your time to be able to talk to us. I mean, one question I want to know is, well, I want to ask is, you know, could you explain to all our listeners, you know, how they can find you, you know, what's the best, you know, way to reach out to you and, you know, join the app? That'd be a nice thing to kind of share to our listeners.
Absolutely. So they can search fatherly with an I. So it's the word father with an L-I at the end. And you can search it on the App Store or Google Play. You know, Steve and I and Fatherly, we're on Instagram, we're on LinkedIn, we're on Facebook. So yeah, welcome to reach out to any of us and any others in the Fatherly team through any of those channels. We're very approachable. We're still really young. We've just had that, you know, the app's just been born in February and it's now April. So we're still figuring out. So if you have ideas, if you want to sort of be involved, we're really up for listening and hearing your ideas and involving dads, but also other collaborators. So feel free to reach out to us.
Awesome. And we're excited for Steve's fireside chats coming soon, the retreats in the future, which we can all be looking forward to as well.
Absolutely.
Adnan, do you have any final questions?
Just want to say thank you, Steve, and thank you, Mia, very, very much for your time. This has been a great experience.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
I'll pass over to you, Steve, but just to say from myself, it's been a real pleasure. Really, really great. I feel like what we're doing is really aligned with what you're doing. I'm very excited about your podcast as well. And and it's just been quite actually an energizing way to spend a couple of hours, you know, even though it's Easter Sunday, Ramadan, Passover this week as well. It's a time of a lot of holidays, but it's really nice to, it's been a really good use of time, I think. So yeah. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah, I'll just echo that. Thank you very much. And very happy to have been here. Appreciate your time and look forward to the next conversations.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, bailforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us, and we'll see you soon.